Hello, world. It's the Ladies of Nerditude again. My name is Jill.
And I'm Francine.
And it's been 2 weeks. Let's talk about some nerd stuff.
It has been 2 weeks. It feels both like it's been the shortest amount of time ever and also the longest amount of time ever.
I think that's the quarantine effect.
I think so.
The COVID effect. I don't know.
Time just still a year later means nothing. It's weird.
It is weird.
It's very surreal, but it gives you a lot of time.
It does.
To do a lot of things.
It does. And have you been doing anything during the last 2 weeks?
We've been starting to get our spring garden planned.
Ooh.
So it's very exciting. Last year we had a tomato plant.
Reggie.
Yes, that was our little quarantine project. So this year we're expanding and we're going to get a couple of summertime like fruits and vegetables and stuff and see what we can grow. So that's been our exciting project.
Cool.
How about you? What have you been doing?
I built some bookshelves.
Nice. Of course. I mean, you have a ton of books.
I do. It's a problem.
They need a home.
Yeah. When I was putting them on these new shelves, I think I counted 422.
Oh my God. Is that all of them? Or do you still like, are you like me and you have books like at your parents' house and like everywhere?
Yeah. There's still books at home.
Yeah.
And then some of them that are more about like writing and grammar and stuff, because I'm that person and I'm really cool. Those are all in the office, so they're not on the same shelf, so I didn't count those.
So you do, they're not, those shelves are not holding your entire book collection.
No.
Just the 400 or so.
Exactly. And there's still some space on there. And so my boyfriend was like, okay, so don't get any more. And I was like, but there's room.
Look, that means I can go to the bookstore.
Yeah.
There's space.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Duh. So I'm going to do that later.
Totally. I mean, I fully support this habit. You know this. Yeah.
Exactly. Other than that, just been reading.
Yeah.
Been reading some Harley Quinn comics.
Nice.
And I'm almost done with The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue. I've been kind of drawing that out because I really like it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also like, for me personally, some intense subject matter. So I can only do like little doses of it.
Yeah.
I tried to read Hot Dog Girl.
How did that go?
It was a good idea, but the main character is really annoying, so I gave that up because life's too short.
There are other things to read.
Yeah. And I've been listening to Circe by Madeline Miller.
Mm-hmm.
That's hella good.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. So that's one that I should put on my very long.
I would say so. I mean, if you like mythology at all, which I fucking love mythology.
Heck yeah.
So.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. It's a novelization of all the myths that she was in, but it's like told from her perspective. And it won like best book of the year and all these other things. It's great.
Nice. And you're listening to that on audiobook?
Yes.
Mm. Does she read it or does somebody else read it?
Well, the narrator reads it.
Well, I mean, like, the author.
Oh, for a second, I thought you were saying, like, does Circe read it? Oh, and I was like, let me explain mythology.
Clearly.
No,
no
it's not. It's not the author. Okay. I can't remember what her name is off the top of my head, but it's not the author.
I'm always curious. Like, I don't listen to that many audiobooks, but I'm always like, but who, like, is it the author reading it? Like, when do they make that choice? How do they make that choice? I have so many questions. It's fascinating to me.
I don't know how they make that choice, but... Because, yeah, she doesn't read that one, but then there's, like, when we listen to that Felicia Day one, Felicia Day read it.
Right.
So.
And that's a memoir. It makes sense.
It makes sense. And I'm sure that it's also, like, whether or not the author feels confident enough to do it or has time to do it or whatever.
Yeah. That's awesome, though.
That's my scientific opinion. So, anywho, and I watched The Mummy.
Me too. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. Let's talk about that.
What a coincidence.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. So this episode is going to be about the 1999 Brendan Fraser.
The good one.
The good one. Yeah. The 1999 Brendan Fraser, Rachel Weisz, Mummy, The Mummy, the Universal one, not the one with Tom Cruise, not the one from what, the 30s?
Okay. That one was all right. Thank you.
The Boris Karloff.
Yeah. But I like the old Universal ones. I know they're not for everybody.
They're classics.
But we're talking about.
Yes.
Brendan Fraser.
This one specific one. Yes. Not even the sequels that it spawned and the spinoffs that it...
No, just the first one.
Just the first one. So spoilers ahead.
Dude, if you haven't seen that by now...
It's been like, what?
I don't even care.
20... Oh my gosh, almost math. 30 years.
23?
Yeah, wait, something.
Whatever.
Somewhere between 20 and 30 years. It's, you've had a long time to watch it.
Yeah, so...
How'd you get through the 90s without watching it?
Yeah, so I'm not even going to warn you about spoilers. If you don't know, you don't know. So, whatever. You had time.
So, the idea for this episode was spawned by you sending me an article that made you very angry.
I was so angry.
I was angry, too. It appears that at least a few people on the internet have very strong feelings about the main romance in this movie.
Yeah, which I was shocked by.
Me too. I actually thought it was really good. I like the main female character. I like her relationship with... Like, I liked it. And now I'm pretty cranky when it comes to a lot of love stories.
Well, that's the thing. Okay, so when we were doing our 90s episodes, I watched this because this was one of my favorite movies in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And I remember... When I was growing up and I watched it, I thought it seemed like a pretty good love story, but it's not just about that in the movie. It's also right. about other things.
Mm-hmm.
So I was flipping through articles online and I came across this article written by someone who, shall we say, is significantly younger than either of us.
That's true. Probably wasn't old enough to watch it when it came out in 1999.
And which, you know... Fine, you know, I don't care. Like, age is not but a number, as they say. But also, I do think that while there are some movies that we can look back on and go, oh, that's not good.
Very true.
I don't think this is one of them.
Yeah.
And when I read that article, I'd watched the movie, I read the article, and then I went back and I was like, wait a minute, I just watched this, but maybe there's a point here. Because I had done that with Love Actually, where, you know, you watch something as a younger person, you don't really see the issue with it because right. that wasn't something that was talked about during our time. And then you look at it with new eyes and you go, oh, well, mm-hmm. I can still enjoy the movie, but not that part
right.
or something. But I went back and I watched The Mummy again and I was like, no, I don't see the problem here.
Yeah. I agree. I feel like there might be some sort, like, it's not a generation gap because this is a movie that does not require nostalgia goggles to me.
No,
to
it doesn't.
Enjoy.
I don't think so either.
Yeah. I feel like maybe this particular person didn't get the references that this movie is making to, like, sort of the like classic adventure stories, which often involve like a quickly developing love story, shall we say, through like life and death situations, and there's a lot of like swooning and kissing and all of that kind of stuff. Like, that's, they were being very like schlocky about
it. Well, okay, so Let's okay. I'm trying to think of like where to start with this because I feel like I'm just going to rage for an hour. But honestly, it's sorry. I'm trying to figure out my drink situation. We'll have to put the article that we're actually referring to on our Facebook.
Yeah.
Because
please read it and give us your opinions.
Yeah, I was going to say, so the thing for me is mostly what she pointed out was that the main female character, Evie, who you and I both love.
I love her.
Love her.
She's a nerdy librarian who loves ancient Egypt mm-hmm. and turns into, like, the savior hero of the movie, in my opinion.
Yeah. So
love
they,
it.
They point out that she's really clumsy and she's kind of what would now be considered, like, a stereotypical kind of idiot, really. I guess
like
you could
a
say.
Sheltered, like not really world. She's not like street smart. She's not like,
she's really pretty, but she's really clumsy. Like her, you know, it's a Mary Sue kind of thing is what they were trying to construe it to be. But to me, it's like, I'm going to debate that because I mean, she only had one instance really of knocking over some bookshelves.
And haven't we all been there? You're left to your own devices and you make a giant mess.
And I think given the way that it happened, yeah. Yeah, I can see how that happened. I think that could have happened to anybody.
I agree.
And also, it doesn't, to me, negate all of the other things that she does. I mean, she fucking reads hieroglyphics. She speaks ancient Egyptian. Mm-hmm. And she's very smart in 1925. This is, like, not common.
Yeah. She is also, to me, like, very strong in when she does kind of get out of the library and like get out of the museum, and she starts to like live in this dangerous world of like backstabbing and supernatural horror and all this stuff. Like, she holds her own. There is not a point at which she is like just a floundering idiot to me.
I mean, she stares the mummy in the face and like talks back to him. Like, she's not as scared as you would be, like, because who's expecting this to actually mm-hmm. happen? But she doesn't become the damsel in distress. Yes. She's part of the heroic band, mm-hmm. as it were.
Yeah, they're a team. They all save each other at various points. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the two male characters do have to go and like save her, quote unquote, when she gets voluntarily captured because she's trying to save them.
Right.
So like, it's not, you know, that somebody hits her over the head and kidnaps her in like the sort of damsel in distress type of situation. No. She thought that she was doing the right thing for the group. She was being really brave and super selfless. And the mummy was a big fat liar. That's not her fault.
That should be the subtitle of the movie. The Mummy, a big fat liar.
A big giant liar. that's not her fault. That, again, could have happened to anybody. And she was really damn brave for doing what she did and putting Absolutely. Herself in that position. So, like, yes, she had to be saved, but that could have been any one of them.
Right. And she also, aside from the mummy, like, she stands up to a lot of different men.
That she does.
And she doesn't put up with shit from any of them, including Rick.
Also true.
So this article goes on to debate that because Brendan Fraser's character, Rick, who she finds in an Egyptian jail, decides to kiss her without consent before he is sent potentially to his death at the gallows, that it was like a mixed message about consent and stuff. And it's like, I'm sorry. It was 1925. Mm-hmm. You have to always keep these things in mind when you watch these movies that are based in another time period. Is it okay? No.
But did she get mad about it?
Yes. She got mad about it. So, you know, he did it without consent. Now, also, devil's advocate, he thought he was ready to die. Mm. He probably wasn't thinking super straight, okay? He does apologize later, too.
He does. He does. He is not the most, shall we say, like, gentlemanly person at the right. beginning. He kind of undergoes, like, some character development. So perhaps he's a little roguish. He's right. a bit, you know, and I'm not making excuses for him. That's just his personality.
It's not right that he did that. But also, I think that this particular article, like, really harped on that way too much. Because it's like, you have to remember, 1925, do you think anybody was really worried about that?
Yeah.
No. Nobody was going to stop and be like, excuse me, before I go to my death, do you think that it would be okay? By the way, my name is Richard O'Connell. Like, it's not what's going to happen. It happened. He apologized. She was mad.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And I think it's very telling that not 10 minutes after that in the movie, she slaps the warden's hand away when mm-hmm. he tries to get fresh with her.
Yes.
So, like, when she does have, like, the appropriate reaction to someone touching her without her consent in that moment. Mm-hmm. So I feel like she does have a lot of agency in that situation. Would she have possibly slapped him had he not been behind bars and been pulled away?
I think she would. Probably. I think she would. And like, when it happens at first, she's like, whoa, what the hell? And she's very stunned. And again, he's behind bars. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like, what are you going to do anyway?
I think she would have smacked him.
So if he hadn't been behind bars, I think that she would have retaliated mm-hmm. somehow or whatever. And also, as soon as he does that, the guards pull him away.
Yes.
So it's not like it was something that went on and on and on. Mm-hmm. So
it was just a moment.
again, not cool, Rick. Yeah. But like, and then the article also goes on to say that like later on, she's kind of like daydreaming about it. But to me, she wasn't doing that until after he had cleaned himself up.
Mm-hmm.
He had apologized.
Mm-hmm.
And had kind of proven that he was a decent person.
Yeah.
He just was in like a life or death situation, so on and so forth. Again, not defending him necessarily, but, you know, let's face it, Brendan Fraser was hot in the 90s. And so, I mean, I think that given, once again, the time period, and mm-hmm. this is probably one of her first experiences.
She's very sheltered.
Realistically.
Yeah. And a nerd.
I think it's pretty fair that that would be playing through your head a bit.
Yeah.
So, again, it's not ideal, but I got it.
Yeah. You know. she gives him a lot of crap about it, too. Like,
yes, she does.
As the movie goes on, you know, she's like, you think you're hot shit, you're really not. Like, you know, you think...
If you call that a kiss.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Like, you think I'm this, like, sheltered damsel, but I might surprise you, which she ends up doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she has a lot of, like, spunk to her. She's definitely, like, one to stand up for herself, and she's not going to let him get away with, like, this... behavior, and she kind of like checks him quite a lot,
which I think he likes.
That's what makes them a good couple to me.
Yeah,
is that like she grows to find her strength and find her voice like progressively over the movie. He also grows to realize that like he needs to be checked a little bit, and that mm-hmm. he likes having that dynamic with her. And that really makes me feel like they earn their relationship by the end of the movie.
Well, and he also has absolutely no problem throughout the entire movie with her being smarter than him.
Very true.
He never argues.
No. He's not intimidated by her intelligence.
Not at all.
He's like, thank God you're here.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to know this stuff, and it ain't your brother.
Yeah. He never like second guesses anything that she says.
No.
He's just like, okay, guess we're doing that. And he basically functions as the muscle for whatever mm-hmm. she needs to do. Because her brother...
he's a little bit of a screw-up.
I love Jonathan.
He's a force of chaos in the situation a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
He's very funny. He's, like, witty and snappy. But, like, oof, he's a little bit of a hot mess, too. You know, his life has not... gone down a traditional path either, shall we say.
Right.
This is a ragtag group of rebels.
That they are.
If for nothing else.
And I also like the interactions between Rick and Jonathan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just buddies.
Yeah.
Like, I like it so much. And so to me, it's like a very organic, everybody gets along after the initial bumpiness.
Mm-hmm. Sure. They meet under strange circumstances.
They do. Because, you know... And I like that they all have something that they brought to the table that they all need. Like, we can't do this without Jonathan. We can't mm-hmm. do this without Rick. We can't do this without Evie, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
It's that they are stronger together than they are individually, which to me makes them a really good team mm-hmm. and therefore a really good subject of the movie. And I think it works. Like, their dynamic just, it works. I feel like this author... watched the first maybe like 40 minutes of the movie and then got really frustrated and was like, ugh, this is ridiculous, and turned it off and didn't bother to watch it to see the character development by the end.
Or if they did finish it, which I think they mentioned some stuff about the end of the movie, but it just felt to me like they were so hot-headed about what had happened that they didn't pay attention to the rest of what happened.
I'll take it. Yeah.
And... yeah, I don't know. Reading that article just, like, set me off on, like, this whole thing of, like, you know, again, when you watch an older movie, it's okay to, like, point things out and be like, hey, you know what, we didn't realize in the 80s or whatever mm-hmm. that this wasn't cool.
Like, we thought it was funny, it's not funny.
Don't romanticize this thing, this isn't funny, you know, like, for me, like, 16 Candles mm-hmm. comes to mind. Things like that. But I think that there's also, you swing the other way and you go back and you overly criticize things. And this is just an instance of like, no, Evie's not an airhead, and no, Rick wasn't like some crazed man whore.
Right.
As they say. But like, I don't know. It was like they just wanted something to be angry about, I guess. That's how it felt to me when I was reading it. And I was like, no, let me whip out my slideshow.
Yeah. And this, like, obviously there's a lot of Indiana Jones-ness.
Yes.
To this movie.
An early Universal and, totally. Like, Errol Flynn kind mm-hmm. of stuff. Definitely.
So you're going to get some of that, like, rakish, caddishness, and you're going to yeah. get, like, some of those sort of...
kind of Han Solo.
Yeah. Exactly.
Harrison yeah. Ford characters.
Yeah. You're going to... like, that's going to seep into the movie because that's the type of, like, genre that it is. Mm-hmm. It's that, like... exotic adventure, like, you know, mystery, history, supernatural kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's just the genre that it is.
It is.
So it's got to be a little overblown. There's going to be, like, big gunfights. There's going to be ethnic characters that are not represented perfectly.
And that's the thing. Like when I look back on it with my 2021 eyes, I watch it, and one of the things that really bothers me is that Egyptian characters were being played by people who weren't Egyptian. Mm-hmm.
They couldn't film it in Egypt either.
Right.
Because of the political situation that was going right. on at the time.
But
they had to film it in Morocco.
But for example, like Arnold Vigeloo, who played the mummy, mm-hmm. is from, I believe, Venezuela.
I think he's South American.
And then the woman who played Anaxuna Moon was also South American. Mm-hmm. You know, and also Evie and Jonathan are supposed to be half Egyptian, but Rachel Weisz is an English rose. Mm-hmm. So it just is kind of...
And John Hannah is Australian.
I thought he was Scottish.
He's not Scottish. He's Australian.
Oh, I thought he was Scottish. I always thought he was Scottish. Oh my God. Mind blown.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, not Egyptian.
Not Egyptian. Not half Egyptian.
Yeah.
Wrong exactly. side of the world.
Or Oded Fehr, who plays...
He's British too, right?
No, he's Israeli.
Oh, he's Israeli. Okay.
So it's kind of one of those things where, again, it's not ideal, and I can look back on that and go, you know, I really wish that, even though I really like the cast a lot, it's, you know, they aren't what they yeah. got whitewashed, yeah. you know, for sure. Or at least aren't Egyptian. Like, mm-hmm. maybe they can't film it in Egypt. Fine. Totally fair. But there are Egyptian Americans or Egyptian British people, yes. or, you know. So, again. Not ideal.
They could have done a little bit better with the representation, for yes. sure. They could have done a little bit better with, you know, like some of the portrayal of the culture as mm-hmm. well. It could have been, it was a lot of like pomp and circumstance and like for show and like kind of thing. The thing that really stands out to me as kind of annoying is when the Mujahideen are like attacking Hamunaptra. Mm-hmm. They do the like ululation with like the yell.
Yeah, yeah.
That's something women do in those cultures for okay. either like celebration or grief. It is not a war cry.
I did not know that.
It kind of bothers me every time I watch the movie. So stuff like that like could have just been researched a little bit better and like, you know, right. adjusted to. I get what they were going for. Mm-hmm. That's not a thing. So
yeah,
you know, there were just some things like that that are like at the very beginning there are pyramids in the place where like Seti and all the they weren't really and like a mini sphinx and like what was all of that wasn't
yeah I okay. feel like because this is a movie where at the bottom of the screen it tells you Egypt this year. Okay, you've told me you don't need to put pyramids and sphinxes
where they don't belong
and everything. It's like, okay,
yeah,
I got it. Egypt. Also, Egypt is not just straight up sand mm-hmm. everywhere.
Right.
They have a beautiful coastline.
Yes.
And they've got the Nile and they've got a lot of cool stuff going on, but it's like always in this, it's always the middle of the desert. Mm-hmm. There's sand everywhere. You're going to die here because there's no water. Like,
yeah.
Okay, but like they had an ancient civilization there. I'm sure there's some water nearby.
Mm-hmm. I did like that they put Hamunaptra inside that like crater of the volcano.
Yeah.
I thought that was actually like a really cool choice because that was something different in like the desert, you know, like they were walking through with the camels, like this giant desert. And then boom, there's this like huge landmass that you didn't really expect to be there. And it's a great way to hide a secret city too. Mm-hmm. Very cool. I thought that was a really good choice.
It was.
So, you know, like I kind of go back and forth on like the way that they did the setting and like the, just the details of yeah. the story.
I mean, again, there's a few things you can go through this movie and like when, Evie has to get new clothes.
I know.
I was like, I don't.
Who dressed her?
I don't think that's what they would have given her.
Probably not. They were like, she's just so beautiful. We can't. No.
No.
Also, her hair wasn't covered.
Exactly.
Which was crazy.
And then, like, her face covering was see-through.
Yeah. We all know and these jeweled. Days about masks and, like, actual fabric that covers your actual face. No.
Right. And it was just so that Rick could ogle mm-hmm. her and be like, oh, yeah, your sister's hot.
Right. And so that we get that, like, little dose of, like, you know, exoticism mm-hmm. sort of, like, pushed in there. And they do kind of play with it where the next scene she's on the camel and she's got like her skirt kind of like lift and she has the knee socks. That cracks me up every time because that's so how you would ride a camel in a dress.
Yeah.
Like how else are you going to do that? So I do think they kind of like play with it a little bit, which I like. The initial like, ooh, so pretty moment. I was like, okay, this isn't she's all that. She's not coming down the stairs, you know. But to then kind of like mix it up and like sort of bring it back to reality, I thought was really clever.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I don't know. It's funny. Even when she's trying to have like the like heroic moment when they're like riding the camels through the and then her camel makes that crazy noise and like takes off running. It's just cute. It's just funny because it feels real. Those moments feel like, yep, that'll happen to you. You're trying to be like pretty and cool and like poised and like heroic and then oops, now you look a little foolish and like a little silly. I relate a lot to her.
Yeah, no, I think she's great. I think they're all great. You know, and then you've got the characters who are kind of gross
mm-hmm.
and they kind of live in a gray area, you know, like Benny or mm-hmm. The guy from the jail.
The warden.
Yeah, I don't think he I don't is think given he has a name.
He dies kind of early on.
He does.
Too,
and,
so.
And, you know, but they're not evil
right
necessarily.
They're opportunistic.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much their like character trait. That's what
you know
they're
how
doing
long
there.
It took me to figure out that Benny was Hungarian.
Yeah, I didn't know that until you
year.
Told me.
And it was because we watched it with the subtitles on and it said he was speaking in a Hungarian and then I looked into it and it was like according to the Mummy Wiki, he's like from Hungary and is in the French Foreign Legion. Legion.
It's a whole other thing.
That's
the French Foreign
thing.
Legion.
Goodness. Yeah. So I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I definitely didn't know that until you told me.
And apparently they were in Egypt at the time.
Yeah.
So.
But not in Libya because Libya didn't exist in the 1920s.
Yeah, just like some quick little fact checking and things like that would have benefited this movie greatly. But I mean, honestly, if you just go into it to be entertained, I think it's great.
It is really great. I think they do a fairly good job sticking to the correct historical timeline as well. Like not only of the 20s, aside from, you know, like the odd mistake, but the whole like Seti the First and, you know, Jewish slavery and all of like that pretty much lines up with that like 19th dynasty Egypt kind of timeline. So I was like, okay, at least they sort of kept the pieces in place there. They cherry picked a few names to like stick together. Imhotep
yeah.
was not a priest. He was a pyramid builder and an architect.
Maybe
you know?
It was like being named Mark.
Perhaps.
And there were a lot of dudes named Imhotep.
Totally. Sure. Yes.
That's what I always think. I'm like, okay, sure.
Yeah. Maybe it was just a different Imhotep. Not the same one.
It's a different guy.
But, you know, I think that they did a pretty good job. I also like, I read something a long time ago behind the scenes where they actually brought in an Egyptologist to teach the cast to speak the way that they think the ancient Egyptian would have been pronounced. Like, obviously nobody knows.
Right.
But they did a little homework there and, like, really cared because so many of the characters speak so much ancient Egyptian.
A lot.
That I'm happy to hear that they, like, put some effort into that process and, like, teaching people how to read. And
I did appreciate that Imhotep and Anaxunamun didn't speak any English.
They didn't just magically learn English at some point.
Yeah, because if you go back and you watch, like, older movies that are similar to this, it's like all of a sudden they speak English. Or they'll speak in English and then another character will go, what did they say?
Mm-hmm.
and they like just
for
kind
our benefit.
Of, yeah. Yeah. And so I appreciated that, like, you know, because like you'd see like Rick would be going, what the fuck is going on? Mm-hmm. It was interesting. I liked that. I appreciated that. So I didn't know that they had brought people on for that. So that's cool.
Yeah. And I've heard different pronunciations of like ancient Egyptian, like when you watch someone like translating it. This one wasn't terrible comparatively to some other ones that I've heard. I was like, okay, this sounds fairly like an actual language, not just like we made up a bunch of words because who cares? Like they actually tried. And I think that was really cool. I also appreciate kind of like I love a good villain, you know this. Mm-hmm. And I think the mummy Imhotep is a really good villain because he thinks that he is right.
Yes, I agree. I think that he's a very good villain because you kind of get where he's coming from.
Right? It makes sense from his perspective.
Like, you might not agree with him, but you see why he's mad.
Mm-hmm.
And you see an Anaxunamun, who is also debatably a villain.
Sure.
I'd be pissed too if I was her.
It's a rough life for her. And it's a rough life for him. Right from the beginning, mm-hmm. we see, like, she's a mistress that really has no agency over, like, her body or her life.
Right.
And she is, like, fucking fed up, which I understand. She's like, I love who I love. Shut the hell up. Leave me alone, you creepy old man. Like, and then she dies. That's pretty rough. When you wake up a couple thousand years later, you're going to be mad.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. I always think, though, every time I watch it, when it's in the beginning and she's got the body paint on, mm-hmm. so that they'll know if somebody touched her. Like, okay, like, what, she never scratched her own arm?
I guess she's not allowed to.
I guess, because that'd be what I'd say. Like, oh, well, my arm was itchy. Yeah, I'm sure there's mosquitoes in Egypt, okay? Like, oh, well, you know, I just did this.
Unacceptable.
Like, instead led to murder. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely understand, like, her story. I think we get her story really strongly, mm-hmm. even though she's not on screen for very much when you look at the whole runtime of the movie. She's got a bigger part to play in, like, the second movie, which is debatable.
We're not talking about that.
We'll leave that.
That didn't happen.
I feel like we get a good idea of, like, what her life is like and why she does what she does. And by extension, why Imhotep does what he does. And it really does make sense. It's a very, like, twisted love story from their perspective. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to be together. Whether that requires, you know, human sacrifice and, like, murder and all of the stuff. Like, it's a means to an end.
But he did it for love.
Yeah. They have a great epic love. And, like, that is, maybe they're a little twisted. Maybe they're a little deranged. Maybe time has not been kind.
It's
time
a little,
and torture.
Little Sid and Nancy, sure.
Yeah, it's, you know, they don't really care about, like, the human casualty that it takes to bring them together and bring them back together various times. But I think I understand from their perspective, like, that's really important to them. That's, like, the thing that was their dying wish, like, literally, was to be together. Mm-hmm. And they have the power to do that. Kinda. So they're going to try to do that. Like, that was their whole reason for being, was, like, this all-consuming love. I get it. It kind of makes sense. It's, like, it makes it a more interesting story, especially when you butt their love story up against Rick and Evie's love story.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really interesting.
Definitely.
To kind of, like, make it about these two couples and, like, their struggles to, like, be a couple, you know, like, figure out how to exist that way.
Right.
And that also gives Imhotep a reason to be fixated on Evie. That makes sense. It's not just like, oh, she's the girl, or like, oh, she's so pretty. Like, no, he honestly thinks that, like, she's the reincarnation of his dead lover.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what causes him to, like, that and probably, like, you know, 3,000 years of torture makes him a little crazy.
Well, yeah. And again, he's been dead for, like, 3,000 years. He probably doesn't 100% remember what she looked like.
True. True. Yeah. And I think it lends credence when we say, like, you know, Evie's half Egyptian, even if she doesn't look it. that helps him kind of like connect the dots, you know. She speaks ancient Egyptian, which also is like, hey, somebody who speaks my language, you know, like somebody that I understand. And he gets a little obsessed.
Yeah.
With like that being his way back.
But through the whole, like, even though he, like he thinks it's a reincarnation, but knows that it's not actually an Aksunamun inside. Right. It's just like they look alike.
Mm-hmm. And he can make it
but
that way.
He's like, but I could kill you and have the real thing. Whereas I'm sure that, like, you know, killing Rick would be satisfying for him, but it's not the same.
He doesn't really care.
Yeah.
He only goes after Rick and Jonathan when they either get in his way or when there's no one else to, like, you know, when they, like, allow an Aksunamun to get killed again at the very end. And then he's just, like, pissed and, like, raging at everybody. Up to that point, they are not his focus.
No.
He does not care. He cares about her, and he also cares about the Americans and the Egyptologists.
Because this is why you don't touch cursed stuff.
Go ahead. Tell us why you don't touch cursed things. No,
because you know why you don't touch cursed stuff. This movie. Don't fucking touch it.
Especially when you go through all of the, like, rigmarole of translating and reading out loud all of the reasons not to touch it.
Hey, this is, like, don't open this box because it's going to release all the plagues. And also, your organs will be assimilated into this dead guy.
Let's open the box.
I'm sorry. This is the one time where I agree with Benny. I'm out. Like, well, it's the curse. Bye.
And that is why he did not end up as one of the victims, because he left at the appropriate time in that moment.
See? Once again, I have made it out. Like, no. I'm keeping my organs. Yeah. Those are mine. Thank you. Grew them myself. They belong to me. But that is something that every time I watch this movie, I just get so fired up. Because what are you guys doing?
Yeah. They are definitely meant to be our Howard Carter, our Lord Carnarvon. Yeah, like the people who at this time were legit reading those exact curses on Egyptian tombs and breaking the seal immediately after reading that. Like, oh, that's quaint. They put a curse on it. Okay, anyway, what's inside? Like, that was...
Yeah, because this was the time where, I hate to say it, this is not our shining moment of history where Americans and British people and whoever else was there were going through these places and looting.
Yeah. Yeah. And the joke that one of the American archaeologists makes about drying out the mummy and using him for firewood.
Mm-hmm.
Not historically inaccurate. That actually happened.
Or grinding it up and making it into medicine, quote unquote medicine. And
yep, that was a big trade at the time. As much as there was a trade in Egyptian artifacts because they were exotic and, like, beautiful and historic and classical and all that stuff, because that was, like, in the imagination in the 20s and the 30s. Disrespecting very carefully planned out and sacred burials and sites was also definitely happening.
Yeah. Taking all of King Tut's everything, all of his treasure, and
Putting it all back in the British Museum and being like, yay, we're protecting it now. I understand why Egypt at this time, like now, is very mad. And they send it all back. I mean, they're not the only ones either who are like, hey, we'd like our stuff back. We never, like, asked you to come and take it.
Stole it.
Yeah. Thanks. You can just, like, bring it back. That'd be cool. Mm-hmm. Like, we want to display it. Like, it's our history. It came from here. We have museums. Can we, like, put it in our own museums? You can come here and visit.
Yeah.
If you want to see it.
Yeah, thanks. Bring us your tourist dollars and, you know.
Yeah. Let us decide how to display it and, like, how to talk about it, too.
That's the thing is, like, I always think about that because, okay, you know how stitious I am. But, like, when I go to a museum and I see the Egyptian stuff, like, yeah, part of me kind of wonders, like, is this accurate information?
Yeah.
Really? Or, you know, is it kind of fudged a little? Like, how would it be different if an actual Egyptian person who had studied the Egyptian history and all that kind of stuff wrote this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Little placard thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just always wonder about that.
I totally agree. I went to see the treasures of King Tut's tomb when it was on.
Oh, neat. I saw it was going to be in San Francisco, but I never actually made it there.
It went on tour and I went to see it. forget where I was. I don't even remember. Maybe Chicago. I think Chicago, but sure. I'm not sure. I visit like museums just all across the country whenever I travel. And it was beautiful, like the way that they had it set up and everything, like it was really beautiful. But I also couldn't help but think like how, like the mummy was in my mind, you know, like that kind of stuff was in my mind. Like how would the people of his time who thought that they were like sending him off to the afterlife with all of this stuff, because that was the way that you did that. Like how would they feel about me gawking at all of these beautiful things?
I think
things.
That's a big reason.
It's weird.
I get so, like, I guess almost like nervous around not just ancient Egyptian stuff, but like anything that has to do with someone's burial,
like
stuff.
Death and afterlife.
It's like, you know, this is just me, but like you don't know what happens after. And like even if everybody's wrong, you just die in your dirt, whatever. Like that is just so disrespectful. Cause it's and this is where my twisted mind always goes. What if 3,000 years from now somebody digs me up and puts me in a museum? I don't want people staring at me and stuff. Like I know I'm not there anymore, theoretically, but like
it's a weird thing
I'd
to
be
think
pissed.
About. Yeah. Like, you understand why he's a little mad.
Yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe I'll just absorb some organs.
Right. Like maybe I'll, you know, lash out a little bit and like get my own agency like done. You know, like I got shit to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it and I don't really care about you guys because you cursed yourselves. Like you did this to yourselves. Okay, bye.
Which I thought was interesting because when he I always feel bad for all of just the people in Cairo and mm-hmm. all the other Egyptians who start going through these plagues and they're just like,
what happened?
What is going on? I always feel bad for them because like they didn't do anything. They're just like bystanders. But I also see why Imhotep feels like you guys did this.
Yeah.
There was a warning mm-hmm. on the box.
Yep.
You ignored it.
You opened it. You set yourselves up.
So everybody's like, going to pay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's definitely, he has no problem with the body count.
No, he does not. there's only two bodies he cares about. His and Anaximenes.
True.
Everyone
else is expendable.
Whatever.
Yep. Yeah. They're either in his way or they are like fuel for the situation that he needs to get to. I get it. Maybe it's a little myopic, but I understand where he's coming from. You know, and I think that makes this a stronger movie at the end of the day, like because you can understand Imhotep and because he's a villain, but like you don't just hate him.
No, I don't ever feel even after all the shit that he does, it's like I don't ever hate him because it's like, Yeah, I would be pretty pissed too. And given the time that once again, context, where he's from, he was a priest.
Mm-hmm.
He like super believes in the Egyptian deities and everything. So to him, this is fair.
Yeah.
This is payback. And he has the power to right a wrong mm-hmm. that was done against him. And he's going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they basically like tortured him for a couple thousand years for love. That's really like the crux of his character, and they separated him from the person that he loved.
Yeah,
that's a rough time.
And I mean, I will say when I, because this came out in 99, so mm-hmm. I was probably 10 or 11, so just old enough to go see it, right? I had such nightmares.
Did you really?
About the part where they mummify them alive.
Mm.
Because, sure. I don't know about you, but being buried alive, no thank you. No thank you.
Yeah.
But that whole part just really...
It's upsetting.
Mm-hmm. Upsetting. That's a good... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. It's supposed to be, like, horrific, right? Because it's these, like, big punishments for this, like...
And it's not gory or anything, but it gives you just enough of an idea of what the... I'm probably not going to say this right. The Hamdai
mm-hmm.
curse?
The Hamdai, yeah.
Hamdai. Okay. The curse that they put on him. How awful is that?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I don't know if you, I read like a little bit online about the novelization and it actually made me want to read the book.
I didn't realize there was a novelization.
They did make a novelization and it goes into like more detail about like the characters and things that were happening.
Sounds interesting.
I know. I was like, I kind of want to read this, so I may do that.
Yeah.
They talked about the Humdai being like making a little bit more sense because I was always sort of like, well, all the scarabs like ate him and then they died because she finds like the skeletons of them. And then like apparently he kind of like died, but not really at like some point in time.
He's still juicy.
Yeah. Or whatever. Like how does, I thought it was supposed to be like an eternal punishment, but then they have to wake him up. So like, and also he's not really ever like mummified. So they call him the mummy, but he's not really a mummy. He's just like a dude wrapped up and like,
I mean, they, eaten. Yeah. Cause they didn't take his organs.
No, they didn't mummify him.
They didn't mummify him. They cut out his tongue and they wrapped him in the wrapping and mm-hmm. then they buried him with the scarabs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very weird. But the book, the novelization, talks about how the scarabs ate him and then he had to eat the scarabs and then the scarabs like also became immortal. And that's why they pop out of the ground and are like all over the place and like eating people and stuff. And I was like, huh.
I guess I had never thought. I thought they were just different scarabs. I don't know.
Apparently, it's like all kind of this sort of perverse life cycle of death that kind of goes with like the Egyptian idea of life and death. And I was like, "Why? That's kind of deep." I was very impressed. It made me want to read the novelization.
Well, yeah, now I want to read it.
I was like, "That is actually really clever." So I did not even give this movie that much credit for being that clever. But when they really get like down to the nitty gritty, they thought about a lot of things. They had to cut stuff and, you know, like
for sure. And action I'm sure movie there's like and, deleted scenes and stuff, which I don't think I've seen anytime recently. So I don't remember what any of them are.
Yeah, me either. I don't know.
But yeah, maybe but yeah, I remember like that whole thing and I was terrified of the scarabs because of how fast they moved and everything.
And the burrowing.
Oh man.
I'm not a fan.
No, thank you.
Not a fan of any type of like burrowing bug into people. I'm good.
No. The scene where it goes up under their skin,
I'm good. I'm not a big bug person to start with.
I'm not either.
They made some pretty terrifying bugs in this movie.
They did. And the first time I saw it, I was really scared Jonathan was going to die.
Aww.
When that one goes up his arm.
Yeah.
And I, oh.
They set you up for it because the warden
right.
dies the same way. Mm-hmm. So you think, oh my gosh, they can't kill the brother. He's like a main character.
Yeah, and he's the funny guy.
Mm-hmm. They saved him, but it was a little touch and go. It was a little
but
scary.
But I'm sure he still like had some arm ache.
Mm-hmm.
Probably still very missing sad. Some muscle or something there. But, and I do also find it interesting that in this movie, so normally in a movie like this, like the Americans are just straight up like the bad guys, but mm-hmm. I liked that there were good Americans and bad Americans.
Yeah, it was fair.
That was fair. I
there are
that.
Good and bad Americans. I agree.
Despite what everybody thinks, there are some good ones of us. But I liked seeing that like the other group had like the equivalent of Rick.
Yes.
And then they had, you know, a couple of like kind of rando people that you almost wondered what they were doing there, but they were there chasing the treasure.
They were there to die.
And then the guy who was a little bit more versed in the Egyptology stuff, which I thought it was really cool that he would talk to Evie about stuff and still not look down on her for being a woman, which I would expect him to do.
He does in this a little time bit. Period.
A little bit, but
at
not
the
what
beginning.
I, but not what I thought he would
yeah.
do.
He was like, they're led by a woman. Of course they're not gonna find anything or whatever. But then once he actually gets to talking to her and shit hits the fan.
That's what I mean, is like that he says, you know, they're led by a woman, what do they know?
And then
or
he
what
goes
does a woman know or whatever. And it's like, but then he hears her say, you know, whatever, and it's like, oh shit, she knows just as much as I do, if not more.
Yeah,
let's talk.
They both screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
He screwed up and opened the box with the canopic jars and got all of them killed, and she screwed up and read some stuff that she probably shouldn't have read out loud and, you know, like brought the curse to life.
We mustn't read from the book
and all that stuff. They both made kind of equal mistakes in that sense. And they both put their lives in danger.
Curiosity kills the cat.
You know, you're an academic. You tend to do some things that maybe are not like the safest things to do because you're thinking with your brain like, oh, that's really interesting.
You're thinking with your brain.
Yeah. You know, your like curiosity is and your academic part of your brain is like just overriding the sense making part that's mm-hmm. like you shouldn't do that. That's not smart. I relate. I understand. Nope. I'm the one that goes down into the hole and is like, ooh, what's this? Let me touch it. Like let me pick it up.
I know. That's why I make it and you don't.
If I get a really interesting, cool spirit like supernatural death like that, it happened.
Say that until you get cursed.
If I get cursed, I hope I'm smart enough to break the curse before it kills me. Because that's what happens to Evie, right? They break the curse before it kills them.
Or you could just peace out and not worry about it at all.
Yeah, but what fun is that? Where's the adventure?
Great fun. I would say that's some great fun, personally.
Where's the adventure? That's not how you become the main character of the movie, Jill.
Okay.
You're fine with that.
I'm okay with that. Yeah. I'm trying to think about like anything else in the movie that I'm like, we gotta talk about this.
Yeah, I definitely like the overall sort of tone of the movie. I think it's very like fairly representative of, you know, like the different character types that we have going on. Our different tropes and stuff are all like, you know, they're fairly played for the most part. And I like that. We've got like the swashbuckling hero, but he's not perfect. He's a little bit of a jerk. He's a little bit cocky. He gets into trouble. He like isn't perfect. He needs other people to save him sometimes. Totally fair. Got like the bookworm, like pretty girl who's also really smart. And I like that they sort of like transferred some of that Indiana Jones academic smarts onto our leading lady. Thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I did enjoy that, like, Rick didn't really know mm-hmm. anything. He kind of has the mentality of treasure, which is yeah. what he says later. He's like, I know my treasure.
Mm-hmm. He's got the life experience. Mm-hmm. He's got, like, the battle-hardened, like, I know about it because I was there. I know about it because I was, like, in the trenches with people who talked about it. I didn't read it in a book.
Yeah. Exactly. And I like that Jonathan is kind of like a backup to Evie. Like if she can't be the hero of that moment, oh, look, we have another person who can read Egyptian.
Kind of.
Mostly.
Yeah. He's a little bit of a screw up, too.
Yeah. But I like him a lot. And then I do like Oded Ferrer's character, mm-hmm. whose name escapes me at the moment.
He doesn't actually have a name at the.
I thought he had a name.
In the movie, they never say it.
Yeah. Oh, maybe they don't like say it until the second mm-hmm. one. Okay.
He has a name. It escapes me because I don't like the second movie.
Yeah.
But they never say it in the first movie.
Yeah. Well, I really like his character, too, because you don't, until later, really know, is he the good guy? Mm-hmm. Is he a bad guy? Like, what is he? And he always reminds me of the Brotherhood in the Indiana Jones mm-hmm. movies, where they're like,
yes,
the ancient people tasked with guarding this secret of mm-hmm. some kind. And you know, they just hang around wherever, and they've got a mysterious tattoo.
Mm-hmm. Very similar. So, yes.
But I really like his character and how later, once he's established to be a good guy, like, he and Rick get to be, like, adventure bros.
Mm-hmm. They're very cute together. I like the bromances
so cute.
In this movie are very good.
Mm-hmm.
They are. As much as it's, like, a romance, the, like, kinship between people is really good.
I agree.
It's super well done. And it kind of gives you like the warm, fuzzy feelings where you're like, oh, they are like brothers in arms. That's great. Yeah, it's cool. He reminds me a little bit of Assassin's Creed. The like,
yeah, I could see that.
The brotherhood sort of like we hang in the shadows and we like influence things when we need to because mm-hmm. otherwise shit hits the fan and goes crazy. So like we have to be here to like regulate people doing dumb stuff. It's like, yes, understandable, sir. But he comes off as like dangerous at the beginning and he comes off as like,
yeah, you like, don't know,
not on their side because he's not. He's like, what the hell are you guys doing? Why are you here? You're just going to make trouble. Go home. Fair, sir.
I'm trying to find what his name was. Oh, okay. in the movie, his name is Ardith.
Okay.
Ardith Bay.
Which is possibly a character or a like a name that they use in the original Mummy. I haven't seen that movie in such a long time.
It's been a while. But I do know that in the original film, the mummy was named Imhotep.
Mm.
I do know that much.
So they borrowed, they like kept that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it sounds so ancient Egyptian-y.
Yeah.
It's perfect. Who needs to change it? I'm guessing the Tom Cruise mummy was not named Imhotep. But I don't know. I haven't seen it.
Okay, so the only thing of that I've seen, I saw the trailer.
Me too. And they were flying in the plane.
Yeah, and I watched a very small clip where Russell Crowe played Jekyll and Hyde.
I think I heard that because he's supposed to get his own
movie. Yeah, and because Universal was trying to reboot their original Monsters, mm-hmm. which I get because, like, I really like the Universal Monsters, the originals.
Right.
But I just think that also, like, I'm sorry, you can't make Dracula that way without Bela Lugosi.
Yeah.
It just doesn't really work for
me. It just turns into a CGI fest.
Yeah, and when they decided that they were going to redo The Mummy, I just remember thinking, no, you can't, because the 99 one is so iconic and mm-hmm. still popular now
mm-hmm.
that redoing it, I thought they were redoing that exact one, but with Tom Cruise. And I was like, and also, as soon as they said Tom Cruise, no. I was like, I'm out.
Yeah, please
I
no.
just, I don't find him entertaining at all. And then when I heard that they had made The Mummy into a woman, part of me was like, oh, that's kind of cool. We can be villains too.
Yeah.
But also, it seemed like they were trying to be overly feminist, or like they were doing it more for the cash grab. Like, oh, look, we made The Mummy into a woman.
Yeah.
Instead of doing it for like a plot reason.
I feel that way about that entire project from the jump, from the first trailer I saw. I was like, this is not about the story.
It looked like garbage. I didn't even bother.
It's just like, to me, it seemed like everything was a slave to the image that they were trying to portray.
Yeah.
The CGI, mm-hmm. the like female villain or not, or is she or was she? I don't even know.
And then given who they had casted Tom Cruise, I was like, oh great, is he gonna like fall in love with the mummy?
Probably.
And I don't know. I don't know if that happened because I didn't fucking watch it.
Yeah.
But
I've seen Inca Mummy Girl. I know how this turns out. It never works.
It doesn't go well. Ask Xander Harris.
Right? It never goes well. They should have learned by now.
Yeah.
Not to do this.
And when you go to Universal Studios Hollywood, last time I was there, the Mummy ride was based off the 99 mm-hmm. movie.
And it's so good. It's well done. I hope they never are they changing
they
it?
They were when I was there, which was I believe 2017.
They were changing it to the one
they had signs up that said that they were going to make us some updates.
Ugh.
So and that was around the time that movie was coming out.
I hate it.
It was just kind of like, please don't.
Why do they have to ruin a good
please
thing?
Please don't. Because that ride is so good.
It was so fun. I've only been on it once because I don't get out to... I've only been to Universal Studios Hollywood once.
It's so fun. Highly recommend.
And I was like, I have to go because you had told me it was so good and the mm-hmm. line was kind of short when we went, which was amazing.
Yeah. Because you have to, like, kind of hike to get there.
It was a hike. I had to take the escalator thingy down the hill. It was a freaking mountain.
Yeah, Universal Hollywood is
it's like
an interesting setup.
Yeah, it's like on the... It was worth it, though.
Yeah.
Totally worth it, because that was so fun. It's, like, down in the corner by the Transformers ride in the Jurassic Park with the Velociraptor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it was totally worth it. That was such a fun ride.
Did you see the guys dressed as Anubis walking around?
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, they were... It was kind of hot when we were there, so I feel like maybe they were, like, just doing some shifts because they weren't there for very long. Mm-hmm. But they were taking pictures with people, and it was really nice.
Yeah.
And there were a couple people, like, on stilts.
Yeah.
That were also, like, kind of hanging out by the exit.
When you go into... the ride. So like after the lockers to put your purses, because they won't let you really bring anything on the ride. Because
understandable.
Because even though you never flip, you go it's really fast. Like it's fast and like you could easily could lose out. Whatever.
Yeah.
After you go past the lockers, did you? You saw the thing where you could stick your hand in?
Mm-hmm, I did not.
Did you do it? I didn't do it.
I couldn't. There were kids.
Our friend Misha did. I was like, we had some adult beverages before we went on this ride. And I was like, do it, do it. And she's like, you do it. I was like, I'm not fucking doing it. I am a little nervous just right. even being around all this Egyptian stuff because I'm stitious. And she stuck her hand in there and she said it's like a puff of air. Mm. But she screamed and pulled her hand back, and then that made all these kids behind us scream because they had seen the movie and they were like, "Oh my god, the scarab got her!" That's a good time. It's a good time. It's a good place to mess with kids, that's for sure.
There were a bunch of kids standing around daring each other to stick their hand in when we were standing there, and then the line was moving, and I was like, "Okay, I'm not going to be the 30-year-old that's like, out of my way, children."
I would. This is why we should go to an amusement park together.
Not that, but they were all like, you know, they put their like fingertips in and they were like all scared. And then they were like, you're a chicken. But then like, I don't see you doing it either. It was very funny.
I'm gonna keep my fingers.
Super entertaining, I have to say. They were really funny. And that was really cute. Like the whole ambiance that they created around the ride was really awesome. I thought it was like so well done. I'm so bummed that they're changing it. I hope they change their mind.
Maybe it's like a super minor thing too that you might not even notice because that movie tanked.
That's why I hope they change their mind. They're like, oh, okay, well, never
and
mind.
And then when I was there, we went like a couple weeks before they shut down Jurassic Park because mm-hmm. they were redoing that, which when I went on Jurassic Park, they needed to update it because they hadn't updated it since the first time I had mm-hmm. been there as a 9-year-old.
I didn't get to go because it was shut down by the time I got there.
Well,
so I've never been.
So when I was on there, like the dinosaurs needed to be repainted. Like you could tell they were animatronic and stuff. And that's rough. And stuff was coming off of them. But they were redoing that off of the popularity of the Chris Pratt mm-hmm. Jurassic Park movies. But I didn't really see exactly what they were going to do to the mummy ride, but I just assume that it was going to be based off
they're
of
just going to put Tom Cruise's
because everything
face.
That I saw in there looked well kept.
Yeah.
Didn't look like they needed to like repaint anything or.
They're just going to stick a stuffed Tom Cruise somewhere.
Yeah, maybe like on Pirates of the Caribbean there, how they just put Johnny mm-hmm. Depp on there. Yeah.
Yeah, they're just going to stick him at the end. It's just going to be a giant face. That's, you know, the giant face. It's going to be his face now.
I mean, that would be scary.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it's one of my favorite 90s movies. And
it's a joyful movie.
It is. And I don't care what that article says. Like, I just didn't agree.
Yeah. It's fun. I think it's fun. It's slightly educational. If anything, it makes you curious, possibly, to go learn a little bit about ancient Egypt, mm-hmm. which I think is great. Strong female characters. Good villain. Fun, campy action. A good love story that I actually still maintain
still for them.
That it is a good solid love story. Fight me.
that person will.
I'll fight them. I will. I will bring my PowerPoint slides. And I think it's got some heart to it in like various ways that like romantically and also friendship wise. And it makes me feel good to watch it.
Like, I agree because I also felt like, and this is a me thing, but like I liked that everybody at the end of the movie, their story was resolved.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like everybody got what they deserved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like Benny got his, and you know Rick and Evie got each other,
and some treasure,
and Jonathan ended up with his treasure mm-hmm. that he wanted, and you know. Imhotep and Naxunamun didn't make it, so
yeah,
I felt like everybody got what they deserved.
Yeah, it pretty classically ends up as like an adventure serial type movie. You know, your heroes get the girl or the guy in this case, and like everything kind of washes out to feel right at the end. You're like, okay, I'm satisfied with this ending. I don't know that, like, I understand that it did so well and it continues to do so well that it spawned a whole bunch of, like, spinoffs and sequels and things like that. But this is, like, the one to me. Like, I never have
to. I'll watch the second if it's on, but I'd rather watch something else, probably.
You'd rather watch the first one, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the ones with The Rock.
Ugh. I didn't watch...
No.
The one in China, either.
Yeah, the Dragon Tomb of the Dragon Emperor.
Yeah.
That one was not very good.
Didn't watch that. And that was without Evie, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then they replaced Evie.
Mm-hmm. That blonde girl for the Scorpion... for the Scorpion King.
Yeah, because Rachel Weisz is only in the first two, I think. Mm-hmm. And then she was like, I'm moving on.
And then they made a whole bunch of Scorpion King movies. I think they're up to, like, the fourth one or something.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. I'm good.
That's the problem with the CGI fest. That's where it manifested itself in this particular series. It got so... that first one, it was so bad.
I feel like the Mummy, the CGI was decent.
Yeah, no, that was fine.
The Sandstorm was the only part where you could kind of go, oh, this is a little bit dated. But in the second one, when they had The Rock be the Scorpion King, where he was so half bad. Scorpion, it was like, oh, no.
His poor face. It was so tragic. There are just some things that, like, if you can't do it, don't. If you can't do it decently, just don't do it. Industrial Light and Magic is amazing, but sometimes they overstretch themselves. And I think that was an example. Because
that was like, 2002 or something?
Yeah, it was a little early to be so ambitious. And it did not age well. Mm-mm. They tried a little too much.
No. Plus, their kid was annoying.
Yeah, the kid was not the best, like, character choice.
Rick and Evie's kid was annoying. Mm-mm. Alex? No, thank you.
No, and I think that there's a lot to be said about the use of practical effects, especially in a movie like this. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, that is something that newer adventure movies should take to heart, is that, like, stop and think about it for a second before you're...
I'm more impressed with a practical effect than a CGI.
They're way more fun. They might be more expensive. They might be more dangerous, sure. But, like, that immediate, like, oh, we'll just CGI it. We'll just do it in front of a green screen. Like, I end up underwhelmed.
Certain things that works for, like, if you're doing Guardians of the Galaxy.
Sure.
Clearly you can't
shoot people that into space.
Practically.
Yeah.
But for things like this where, you know, when the plane goes down and mm-hmm. the sand blows up and stuff, it's like, oh, yeah, no, that's way better than... Yeah. Just being like, okay, just add some sand.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah. Even when the whole city collapses at the end, like, into the sand, and they're real pillars that are, like, really falling over and stuff mm-hmm. instead of, like, just, you know, CGI, like, weightless looking things, I appreciate it so much more because I'm like, somebody built that set and created that effect and, like, they put the work into it. Same with the bookshelves at the beginning. Those are real bookshelves. Somebody really set that up to really destroy the whole friggin' set. I appreciate the effort.
Yeah. Every time I do see that, though, I'm always like, oh, man.
And you cringe because it feels so hurt.
Because all the, like, and when you watch it and all the loose paper comes mm-hmm. out and you're just like, was that loose? Is that from inside a book?
How
are you going to figure out which book that came from? Oh, my God. I just, like, every time I'm like, well, Evie, there goes the next 3 years.
It gives you the weight of the moment.
It really does. It just...
Even the way it sounds. Like, you know they really put up those shelves and, like, really put all those books on them and actually knocked it all over. And there's just something so real about it because it is real. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Yeah, when she just stands there and looks around.
I feel the same way. I'm just like, fuck.
Yep. I'm going to have to quit this job because I don't want to clean that up kind of thing.
Right? Like, this is my last day. Bye.
Oh, yeah. And then I like her boss, too, when he comes in and is like,
Seriously, though, again?
Sons of the Pharaohs. Yeah.
And you can tell that she is just a little bit of a disaster. And again, I relate so hard to, like, just a bit of chaos, like, following in her wake, you know? Like, you're just there trying to be a librarian, trying to organize everything and keep shit together. And then next thing you know, giant mess of books. It sucks.
It upsets me.
I understand her pain.
Truly. Like, I'm feeling it now a little bit. Just thinking about... No.
That won't happen to your bookshelves. You're fine.
God, I hope not.
So overall, with your nostalgia glasses firmly in your pocket and not on, how do you feel about this movie?
I'm going to give this 4 out of 5 scarabs.
Ew. Ooh, no thank
just
you.
Just because, it's like we said, there's like some things where it's like, you know, I would have liked that actual Egyptian people have been cast, yeah, and things like that. Couple of historical whoopsies, things like that. But mm-hmm. overall, it's like just an entertaining movie. And I really like the love story. So that lady can just take a take a walk. Okay.
We can all have opinions.
I disagree.
Some opinions can be wrong. And,
you know, agree to disagree. If you feel that way about it, then fine. But I don't see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I give it like 4 scarabs and like a leg of a scarab.
Ew.
I know. Because it can't hurt you if it's just the leg.
That's what you think.
Maybe I'm wrong. I also really, really like it. It holds up upon rewatch. When I saw that it was on HBO, I was like, yay! Which is a really good sign to me. Like, of how I feel about a movie when I'm like, yes, even if I've seen it a million times.
It has really great rewatch value.
It does. It's super rewatchable. It's really fun. I feel like you can watch it with diverse groups of people, too. It's like you can watch it with your family. You can watch it with your friends. Like, you can watch it as, like, nostalgia night from the 90s. You can probably watch it with, like, teenagers now. I don't know. I don't have any. There are none in my life to say.
Me either.
But, like, I feel like you probably could do, like, a fun sort of intergenerational movie night. I think it's really appealing.
I think it's got something for everybody.
Yeah. It's a very universally appealing movie. And mm-hmm. I think that is a hard thing to nail. And they got it. Plus, I like the love story. And I love me some Rachel Weisz all day long. Evie is my girl. She's so cool. She's so cool. I love her. Like, her and Hermione Granger. I just, like...
They're very similar.
They're in the same category to me of, like, just badass women who save... everybody. Like, mm-hmm. the story would not move without them. Everybody would be dead.
Yeah, Rick and Jonathan would be dead. Right? Very, very quickly.
So I really just, like, appreciate her to the end of the world and back. She's a great character.
I concur.
So if you haven't seen it, it's on... Or if HBO. You want to watch it again, it's on HBO. I'm sure you could also buy it digitally on several platforms, I'm too. Sure.
I have it on DVD, too.
You can...
Old school! Yeah.
And I think they have the whole collection on HBO, or at least some amalgamation of the collection.
I think at least the first two, but I didn't really look for the other ones, to be fair. So
that's fair. Yeah.
But yeah, I was browsing through there, and it had, like, the 90s nostalgia category, and I was like, oh, shit, mm-hmm. The Mummy. Let's mm-hmm. go.
Yeah, I was really happy to see it, because it's not one that comes up super often on the streaming platforms.
No.
So I was really happy that, like, HBO is definitely bringing back the 90s hard.
I'm here for it.
And I appreciate that. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to rewatching some more 90s classics, because what else do I have to do right now?
Watch The Mummy and paint your nails.
Right. Like, this is a Saturday these days.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So what are we talking about next time?
So next time we're going to look at a very different movie.
Very.
We're going to watch Netflix's Thunder Force with Octavia Spencer and Melissa McCarthy. I have some mixed feelings going into this.
I'm really stoked for Octavia.
Me too.
Not Melissa.
Agree.
The trailer I really went back and forth on.
Yeah, I'm a little scared. I want to like it. I don't know that I will, but my hope for myself and really for both of us is that we find some things to like about it, even if we feel critical about it after watching it.
I think we can do that.
That is my hope. We'll see what happens. But I'm committed to watching it, for better or for worse. And I'm going to try to not read anything much about it.
I'm not either. I'm going to try and go in with an
open mind. Yeah, an open mind. I want to like it because I think it's a unique idea. But we will see how the execution goes. That's what I'm worried about, is how they're actually going to, like, make this movie, like, tell the story. We shall see.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. So we're going to watch that. It's on Netflix right now. It just came out this or past week.
Yeah, last couple days.
So it should be on like your trending, you know, like spotlighty things. So go watch it and join us back here in 2 weeks and we'll talk about it. The good, the bad, the, you know, oop, that was a mistake. We'll see how we feel.
True. All right. Bye.
Bye.